Okay, great. Today I'm going to be talking to you about some research we did looking at attitudes towards inspection of encrypted traffic. And when we talk about encrypted traffic, what we're specifically referring to is the use of TLS proxies to look at the traffic in TLS encrypted connections, usually with websites and others. Terms that are used for this are also SSL inspection. And the reality is this is already being used by many organizations to protect their data. For example, I intern at Sandia National Laboratories, and all the traffic we have is intercepted by a TLS proxy, decrypted and inspected and logged and whatever else they do. It could also be potentially used by governments to spy on citizens. For example, it was done by the Iranian government to spy on Gmail messages for a while before that was caught. And when we look at attitudes towards this, we can see that there's differing attitudes. From security experts, many view this as the greatest evil to ever exist, and all the efforts are focused on stopping it without any questions about what merits it might have, too. On the other hand, businesses are using this to protect their networks, and they feel that it is a very necessary step they need to do to make sure that sensitive private information isn't being exfiltrated out of their network by TLS. And there's many companies whose main products are actually these SSL inspection utilities. So what we wanted to understand was, what do end users think? We have these two bodies that have very diametrically opposed opinions, and it might at the end of the day be end users' opinions that decide who wins out on this battle. But there wasn't a lot of information about what people thought, so we wanted to go and figure that out. First, before we get into that, though, to give all of you a background on TLS proxies, just really briefly, because I recognize not all of you might be aware of them, is the basic question of authentication encryption in TLS is the website who you think it is, and do you have a secure connection to them? And as we talked about this morning in the Chrome, that little green lock icon is supposed to mean you have a secure connection. And their browser verifies a secure connection through the use of what are called X509 certificates. And the browser gets this certificate from the server that initiated the connection, that the connection was initiated to, and then checks it. The way it checks it is by looking at cryptographic signatures on this on that certificate. So the certificate the website produces is signed by what are called certificate authorities, and there might be a chain of these signatures until you get back to what's called a trusted root. These trusted roots are stored locally on your machine. So basically your machine gets that certificate from, say, Amazon.com. It checks who signed it and keeps following that chain upward until it reaches a trusted root and everything's good, or it doesn't and it's bad and it warns you. The way the TLS proxies handle this, then TLS proxies get around this, though, by man-in-the-middling these connections and generating substitute certificates. These certificates are also signed in one of two ways. One way is that they're signed properly by a CA. So, for example, Bluecoat Systems, they have an intermediate CA and theoretically could sign certificates for anybody on the web. Alternatively, if you're at a company like Sandia, what they do is they install their own trusted root certificate on the client's machines that they handle, and that allows them to inspect the traffic. Potentially, one of the most troubling aspects of this, though, is that there's no visual indicator that this is happening. That green lock is still there, even though your tunnel is not end-to-end like you assume. So there are uses for this that are very malicious, and these are kind of obvious. Things like stealing passwords, identity theft, tracking government dissidents, spying and censorship. But on the other hand, there are benevolent uses for businesses and organizations, such as protecting their own networks, blocking malware and viruses, protecting company secrets, blocking harmful websites, and caching malicious individuals. And I note that the reason that this happens, if you go back maybe 10 years and you look at how data was being exfiltrated from networks, it was often over TLS. The attackers could just put the data in TLS, and then the intrusion detection systems would say, well, that's encrypted, I guess I better let it go on out. And same with how malware would often come into the systems. It was a real just black hole in system security for these networks. So one of the things we wanted to do, as I mentioned, was gather user attitudes. Gather user attitudes towards this use of TLS proxies to look at their traffic. And we kind of had a dilemma here, though, is that if we only survey people that already know about TLS proxies, we're probably surveying security experts, and we already know what they think about this. On the other hand, if we are to look at our target demographic, we're going to have to teach them about TLS proxies, which is not ideal. Let's try switching. But it is what we need to do and able to get to our target population. We need to teach them to be able to get their attitudes. And there are limitations with that and the potential that our study could have some level of priming on them. So we really focused on trying to make sure that didn't happen. So we wanted to create a description that taught people about TLS proxies, but strive for neutrality. And the way we went around this is the first thing we did is we surveyed existing documentation about TLS proxies, both from security experts, what they were writing about it, both in research papers and in blog posts. And we also looked at how companies talked about it. And using that, we tried to come up with a fair and balanced description of TLS proxies and their uses. And to get that neutrality, we strove for consensus within our own research group, which had varying opinions toward this, some that thought it was the greatest evil ever, and some that could see valid uses for it if used correctly. And we kept iterating on this description until we had one that everyone was satisfied with. And we also then conducted two pilot studies. The first was a small, convenient sample with people around us. We'd bring them in, have them read this description, ask them some questions, make sure they understood it, and give us their opinions regarding its, how it was written, as well as whether they thought it was like biasing them one way or the other. And based on some tweaks, some feedback they gave us, we tweaked the survey, and then we launched an initial pilot study of 80 Turkers to test whether it was helping them understand it. And after we felt that the results showed that it was understandable, we proceeded to launch our first full study. So in our first study, we collected responses from just a little over 1,000 Mechanical Turkers. It was a very common and standard Mechanical Turk population, slightly skewed male, skewed a little younger. And most of our participants were from the USA and India. We didn't require this, but that's just how it turned out. And the first thing we did was we instructed users about TLS proxies, and then we surveyed them about their opinions using both some Likert scale questions as well as some free response questions, which we could mine their qualitative responses. So looking at the attitudes that we saw here, one of the things is about 50% of this population felt very clearly that TLS proxies were an invasion of privacy. A lot were kind of unsure, with very few thinking they weren't. But interestingly, even though 50% felt that they were an invasion of privacy, approximately 72% said that there were acceptable uses. So they said, this is an invasion of my privacy, but there's some times when this is still acceptable. And interestingly, that didn't mean people weren't concerned about the ramifications. There was a lot of concern that this technology could be used by hackers or governments irresponsibly and compromising their data. And there was also a lot of interest in letting people be notified when this was happening, not necessarily stopping it, but having a chance to be notified and maybe having their consent gathered. And we'll talk about that in a little later in this talk. So looking specifically at what people said were acceptable uses, the number one use was for the organization to protect its own computers. The idea here was that the organization bought these computers, it's their resources, I'm using their computer, they have the right to do whatever they want on their computer. Interestingly, some people also said, you know, Amazon or Google, these are big companies, they darn well better be using TLS proxies because my private data is on there, and I want them to do everything possible to make sure my private data never leaves their servers. So it was very interesting. It wasn't that Google should TLS proxy their connections, but rather their internal connections for more security. People also said that it should be allowed to protect individuals. If you yourself wanted to have your antivirus install a TLS proxy, you know what? That's a great use, and that's fine. And there was a small percentage of people that said it was useful in helping censor content, things like maybe terrorist information, stuff like that. Though there was also about 3% of people said that no matter what the content was, it should never be used to censor. When we look at their concerns, like we said before, the biggest concerns were hackers and government spying. But people were also really concerned about privacy. And while only 10% talked about identity theft, the 10% that did had really visceral reactions to that. They were really worried about the ability for TLS proxies to be used to steal their identity. And once again, we saw that, and this was from when we asked them in a Likert scale question, they're all for notification, but looking at their qualitative responses where you didn't prime them about notification, this kept coming up with about 13% of the participants always re-bringing it up, even though the question wasn't specifically asking about notification. We can also look at their perceptions. We specifically asked them, if you were to find out your network was using a TLS proxy, what would you think? And 2/3 of them were like, I would not be very happy with my network. About 1/3 of them, though, said it depended for the reasons that network was using TLS proxies. But some interesting behaviors they mentioned. They mentioned that they'd be suspicious of the company that was using a TLS proxy, and that they might discontinue their use. This referred to maybe if they found out their ISP's network had a proxy, they might discontinue use there. But it also was in companies. Some people said they would quit if they found out their network had a TLS proxy on it. And others mentioned that they'd change behavior. They'd be very careful what websites they went to. Another thing we found was personas. I know you hear personas and your mind immediately switches to the Western category personas. While we use similar category names here, that was not what drove these personas. Basically, when we are going through all the data and we looked at what people said they would do, as well as their opinions, we started noticing some clear groups. Some were the pragmatic majority. Basically, these are people that reason trade-offs. They said, there's some really good benefits here, there's some really good negatives here, and I'm going to make my decision based on which one has more weight to me. So this included people that both said no to TLS proxies and those that said yes, but were very much about trade-offs. And then we had the privacy fundamentalists who said, you know, it could have all the benefits in the world, but privacy is a fundamental right, and nobody has the right to take it without my consent. And so it doesn't matter if there's benefits, you can never use these. And then there was obviously the unconcerned, people that just didn't care, but in our experience, there was very, very few of them. One of the categories, though, that interested us was the jaded category. These were people that had very strong opinions, often very similar to privacy fundamentalists, but had said, action-wise, I'm going to do nothing. You know, the government's already won. Why should I take any action? It's all lost. And to us, this was sort of troubling. These are people that really care about privacy, that it was really a fundamental right to them, and yet they'd given up any hope in their current situation. So when we looked at this data, we wanted to run a second survey to get more information about those acceptable uses. Before, we had just said, what acceptable uses did you see as a free response question, and looked what people said. So based on their answers, though, we ran a second survey where we looked more in depth at potential acceptable uses and specifically asked them, in this situation, would it be acceptable? Would you need consent? Would you need notification? So this time we ran our second study, which is over 900 Turkers. We had more participants from the USA this time, but otherwise it was roughly consistent with the demographics from the first time. Once again, we instructed users about TLS proxies, and then we asked participants about these special use cases. So some differences from the first time, we noticed this second survey happened a year after the first one, and we found that fewer people thought that TLS proxies were an invasion of privacy, and at this point, nearly 85% of people thought that there were acceptable uses. We're not quite sure what drove this change, but it's possible it had stuff to do with the news talking about terrorists using encrypted communication to create plots. That's the only thing that really made sense, but we weren't really expecting this shift, so we didn't ask a lot of questions that would have elicited more reasons. Looking at acceptable uses, once again, at very top here, we have your employer when you use a company computer, and that was basically what we saw before. If it's their hardware, they have the right to do it. Where things sort of changed is we also saw a lot of support in using it in school. When children were to be protected, people were much more willing to have their children's privacy sacrificed for that security for their children. But where it got really bad, where they started being a lot more pushback, was when, even if you're at your employer but you're using your own device, it's yours, nobody should be able to control it, was kind of the thinking there. And then, of course, your government monitoring your traffic. People were very strongly against that. That was the most strong of the negative reactions. So some meta-level comments we got from looking at all these participants' responses. The first, and in some ways to me, one of the most encouraging results were that these responses were really informed. I admit when I'd read a lot of papers about MTurk, using it to gather opinions, and this was my first time doing an MTurk study. And I wasn't sure what kind of responses I would get. I thought maybe, you know, little one-liner sentences, let me get done with this and move along. But we actually found that not only did they take the time to read the description and understand it, but they gave us really long descriptions of their thoughts. Like sometimes they'd be 3 or 4 paragraphs long, very detailed, and it was very encouraging for me. And it was also impressive to see their understanding of trade-offs. Obviously, they picked up on some we discussed in our description, but then they spent more time thinking and talked about trade-offs, some even that we hadn't originally thought of. For example, in talking about trade-offs, you can see one participant said that there was a double-edged sword with TLS proxies, that they're for your good and security, but they can also be used to harm and spy on you. And another one was talked about how they should never be used without your agreement. Another thing we had was with notification risk. As I mentioned, we had people that strongly were interested in being notified that this was happening. Not necessarily stopping it all the time, but at least knowing of it. So, for example, this one participant said they would like to be informed so that they knew the risk they were taking on that connection. Others felt, like I mentioned, that privacy was their right and they should only be giving it up unless by getting their consent. And I do want to note, obviously, we know notification is a hard problem in usable security. So I'm not just saying, oh, they said notification, we can just flip a switch and now users are all notified. I do recognize that this is a hard problem. but it still stood out as the most clearly consistent result from users, that they really wanted notification of this specifically because it could affect what their behavior. So in conclusion, we gathered user attitudes towards TLS proxies, and we found that participants had a very nuanced view of these things. They saw them both as an invasion of privacy, but also they saw their acceptable uses, especially within the use of businesses. And we found, once again, that users want that notification and consent. And finally, once again, I thought it was great how good the opinions being expressed on mTurk were. And I think it's something that we should all look more into and try to engage users more often, especially with how easy it is to get a large number of responses on Amazon Mechanical Turk. If other people are getting as good of results as we are from it, it's something that we should all do more before we go into system building. We should take some time before you go and design your system even to say, here's the problem I'm thinking, describe it a little to some Turkers, and get a couple hundred or even 1,000 responses about what others think, and use that to guide your design. So instead of building a system and getting user feedback only after the system exists, trying to involve them more throughout, because from our results, it looks like you will get some really good feedback from them. So thank you for your time, and we'll open it up to questions.
I'm just wondering whether your subjects were made aware of the threat of data tampering as well as monitoring. So for example, the delivery of malicious software or of other things to them where they believe they're getting something from a trusted source, and these attacks allowing for the injection or replacement of what's delivered to them?
You'll have to look at the paper. I can't remember off the top of my head. We gave, in the paper, there is the full description that we used for people. But unfortunately, I don't remember off the top of my head. Sorry.
Hey, so I think this is really cool and good work. I wonder, though, a little bit about the population. So you're making a lot of broad categorizations of mTurkers, and I'm not as well-versed in their backgrounds. I wonder if you ask a little bit about their occupation. The fact that they're aware of mTurk may make them a little bit more conscious of these items, so you may be a little over-categorizing some of these results, but, like, you know, have you thought a little bit more about some of the limitations of this population you're measuring?
Certainly. One of the prime ones is that it was primarily from the United States. As we all know, privacy opinions are very different in Europe, and one thing that would have been really easy is to say, let's expand the population outside of this country, but one thing that we noticed really quick, and I know this is picking a small subsection of your question, but one of the reasons we didn't try to use it differently is we recognized there were so many culturally contextually loaded answers that I realized even if I got German responses and figured out a way to translate them, I would miss all of those and I would have a really hard time actually evaluating what they meant. But yes, you're right, mTurk does have limitations on how it represents society, though exactly what that means is still somewhat unknown.
Hi, I'm Jeff Warshaw from UC Santa Cruz. Great talk, thank you. I had a question about the methodology. So with the survey questions, it looked like there was kind of across the board a majority agreement for the questions. And when I see that, I get a little concerned about like acquiescence bias. Is it something where, you know, you give a position, people just kind of generally agree with positions?
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if there were either negatively worded versions of those items or items where there were strong negative, you know,
yeah,
strongly
I think
disagree.
So with them, we tried really often to just be open-ended, so we didn't say anything positive or negative, and we had an external reviewer look at all these questions from outside of our group, outside of our university, to try to, it was Rich Shea, he was at CMU at the time, and I was very thankful for his help because he caught a lot of those biasing in the questions, and he helped us keep them a lot more neutral. Mm-hmm. And so anytime there's a positive or negative slant to the question, we'd reword it so there was no slant.
Okay, thank you.
Konstantin Biznosov, UBC. So I have a general comment on use of mTurk. In our studies, we use them a lot. And in a recent study, we wanted specifically US mTurkers. In your study, you didn't care. And we did some pilot, maybe with like 200, 300 participants. And we also asked from which state they were coming.
Mm-hmm.
And 40% came from Indiana. So then we looked up the geolocation of the IP addresses.
So we did
and
actually look at that.
mTurkers from Indiana, actually, we're coming from India. So just general comment, be careful about mTurk telling you that this particular participant is actually US mTurker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually something we did do. In the second study, we looked closer at the geographical data, And in our results, it wasn't as bad, but it was about 10% of people, 10% of the throwaway data, basically, they had lied and said they were in the U.S., even though they were from India.